Welcome to the Emeraton Tefillah audio series with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Talatia, and today we will learn about Kol Nidre. Yom Kippur begins with a great enigma. As we usher in the holiest day on the Jewish calendar, we commence with what is perhaps one of the most controversial prayers in Jewish liturgy, Kol Nidre. Literally meaning all vows, Kol Nidre is actually not a prayer at all. It's a declaration, a legal formula that annuls vows and the verbal commitments commonly made over the course of the year. Kol Nidre, Vasareh, Shvuyeh, all vows, things that we've made forbidden on ourselves, all oaths, all sorts of commitments. Let them be released. For those of us who have prayed through many a Yom Kippur before, we might not even question the statement. Of course, as we head into the Day of Atonement, repentance, we must clear the air, clear our slate of the myriads of broken promises, unresolved commitments. But if you break out of the lullaby effect, allow yourself to think critically for a minute. Indulge yourself in some curiosity. You might find yourself faced with questions. For me, I was forced to question my assumptions when I learned a piece by Rabbi David Brofsky, Kol Nidre and the Repentance of Yom Kippur. After reading it, I found myself questioning Kol Nidre anew. Keep reading the words. After listing all sorts of promises, but before discussing the notion of absolving them, Kol Nidre says, Mi Yom Kippurim Zeh ad Yom Kippurim Haba, from this Yom Kippur until next Yom Kippur. With this line, with these words, there's a sudden shift. Suddenly, the words are not reflective, but future-oriented. May our future vows be preemptively absolved. I don't know about you, but I find this troubling. Why the future tense? How can we start the year with the mindset that our promises of tomorrow mean nothing? From a sociological and psychological standpoint, I think we all know that keeping promises is a basic tenet of well-being. Commitment is a mechanism that fosters trust and cooperation between people. It helps us create bonds with one another. Studies show that broken promises affect not only our trust in each other, but can actually impact the promise breaker as well, threatening their own sense of self-worth and identity. What's more, knowing that you're free to break your promise creates all sorts of conflicts. In a really interesting 2009 study, the neural circuitry of a broken promise, it was found that when subjects made commitments knowing that they had permission to break them, their neural patterns actually predicted that they would break the promise before they even did. And the study even found activation in certain parts of the brain, suggesting that there was some sort of emotional conflict before the promise was even broken. So breaking promises, not great, but preemptively absolving your promises before you've done so, even worse. How could we go into Yom Kippur with a statement like this? And not coincidentally, Kol Nidre is, historically speaking, a highly controversial piece. It withstood centuries of opposition, both within Jewish tradition and actually externally as well. Over the years, Kol Nidre was actually wielded dangerously by oppressors who championed the peace as proof that Jews could not be trusted, dating back to the Byzantine Emperor Justinian I and pervading European court systems many years later. Jews were actually saddled with the Jews' Oath, a vilifying edict that Jews could not stand as reliable witnesses in Christian courts. As recently as 60 years ago, a piece by Elizabeth Dilling, The Jewish Religion, Its Influence Today, points to Kol Nidre disparagingly as a reflection of the supposed Jewish perspective on commitment. Within our own tradition, too, debate ensued over the piece. How could we be so cavalier in shrugging off responsibilities? Would a technical declaration to absolve them promises even work, halachically speaking? How would it look to outsiders? Rav Amram Gaon of the 9th century, who in fact recorded a version of Kol Nidre in his own Siddur, commented that the custom was a foolish one. And years later, the esteemed Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch also omitted Kol Nidre, although he later recanted it. What's fascinating at least I believe so, is that the history of Kol Nidre, the way it came to form with the shifting tenses and all, I think is key to unlocking its beauty. Kol Nidre was not always written the way we see it in today's Ashkenaz Machzorim. Rav Amram Gaon's version was actually written in the past tense, that all previous promises should be annulled. But just a few centuries later, the Tosafists pushed and Kol Nidre came to have a future orientation, to become an anticipatory cancellation of vows, and ultimately the custom settled with the version that you know today, at least Ashkenazim, by Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, which is, with the shifting tenses. So back to our question, with all the historical controversy, with all the psychological evidence, all the halachic and hashkafic debates, why Kol Nidre? And even more, why Kol Nidre that is future-oriented and seems to tell us that our promises of tomorrow don't matter? That our word doesn't have to be our bond? Why go into Yom Kippur with such pessimism and annul our vows before we've even had the chance to try to fulfill them? I'd like to suggest that Kol Nidre is not about permission to be promise breakers. It's about breaking us out of being promise makers. Kol Nidre is not about permission to be promise breakers. It's about breaking us out of being promise makers. The Torah is actually not a fan, as my college students would say, of making promises. Numerous psukim, including some in Devarim and Kohelet, discourage us from making vows that we can't keep. Clearly, the Torah takes issues with us breaking promises. It's no secret that as flawed humans, we break all sorts of commitments to ourselves and to others. Try Googling why New Year's resolutions fail. Go ahead, Google it. When I did, I got, without exaggeration, almost 6 million results in less than half a second. Needless to say, we frequently fail to live up to our resolutions. So we can understand why the Torah would discourage empty promises. But here's the thing. Even when we do keep promises, Chazal tell us it's still not ideal to have made them. In Nedarim 22a, Shmuel goes so far as to say, even when one fulfills his vow, he is called wicked. Someone who keeps a promise is considered wicked. Could it be he never should have made it to begin with? That even when we keep our promises, we're failing ourselves? I recently read a fascinating 2014 study called Worth Keeping But Not Exceeding: Asymmetric Consequences of Breaking Versus Exceeding Promises. So the study first confirms what is probably obvious to you, that someone breaking a promise is perceived negatively by his peers. But the study goes further. It indicates that once a promise is fulfilled, the peer's evaluation flatlines. In other words, exceeding one's promise, going above and beyond what you committed to, seems to have little effect on peer evaluation. The study concludes that breaking one's promise is costly, but exceeding it does not appear worth the effort. That's in quotes. Exceeding a promise does not appear worth the effort. So all of this is to say that resolutions, even when we manage to keep them, are limited in a way. They can be helpful, but ultimately they might hamper our willingness to strive for more. They don't actually change us. Resolutions are a mechanism for dealing with our psychological, moral, spiritual challenges. But it can't stop there. Imagine a married couple. If I were to tell you that the sole reason they didn't stray, that neither spouse had an affair because of their vow, their commitment, wouldn't you think something was off? Wouldn't you want a couple to stay loyal to one another because their relationship was so precious, so enriching, that they're intrinsically motivated, inspired even, to protect its sanctity? Relying on vows, the adrenaline of willpower, it's a tool, it's useful, but ultimately, if that's all there is, there's something missing. Kol Nidre is not about forgiving ourselves for being total flakes, which is another college term. And it's not about preemptively absolving our promises so that we can live with ourselves when we fail to keep up with them. Kol Nidre is about approaching Yom Kippur with the statement that we strive for more than the bare minimum of a fulfilled promise. The Yom Kippur liturgy is riddled with details. Details that ask us to uproot our assumptions, repair our relationships with one another, with God, with ourselves. The tefillot hold our hand through finding new paradigms, present us with the practicalities of change. Because true change is practical. With all of its controversy, its mystery, Kol Nidre sets the stage for a Yom Kippur that isn't about broken or even fulfilled promises. It's not about resolution, but deep and true revolution. Thank you for learning together. This series has been dedicated by Yitzchak and Barbara Lehman Siegel and family in honor and memory of beloved mother Rose Siegel, Sarah Russa Bat Rafael, and her beloved sister Celia Firestein, Cyril Bat Rafael of Baltimore, Maryland. Please visit ou.org/women/yr for a list of our daily sponsors. Gmar Chatima Tova.